The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. Welcome to another live episode of Wrestling with Jonas, part of the Jonas Podcasting Network, of course. This is episode 211, and I'm joined by the headline, Will Cruz. So, Will, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, John. Yeah, I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. You're very welcome. Let's get right to it, Will, because we spoke a little bit off air, and your kind of accolades and championships that you're holding at the moment is pretty impressive, my friend. So I've got a list here as long as your arm. I'm just going to go through it, but you're the current BWR Underground champion, the current and two-time title championship championship wrestling champion, of course, the current PCW tag team champion with Euston Rees, and the current World War Wrestling heavyweight champion. And you've held that for, I think we said, nearly 1,000 days, Will. So that's pretty astonishing. How does it feel to be probably one of the most decorated wrestlers right now in the UK? I've got a feeling that it's just the tip of the iceberg for you.
Yeah, I don't really look at it as look at me, look how many titles or championships I have. I just want to focus on continuing to improve, and obviously titles are great and championships are great in the scheme of, obviously, people are putting a lot of faith in me to help carry the brand and be a face of the brand. But in terms of what I'm wanting to achieve, in no disrespect to the current ones, obviously it's just just part of my job, and it's just a sign that I'm doing the right thing. Hopefully.
Yeah, it's all part of the journey. It's all part of the long journey as well for yourself. But the last time I saw you, Will, was in action at Wrestle Carnival, their last show, Pure. A couple of weeks ago, I think you teamed with Powerhouse Blake to take on Adam Bolt and Riley Nova. Now, Bolt and Nova, they gave a great fight in defeat, unfortunately. But the display that you and Blake put on that night, two big guys, I think the commentator said it was kind of well over 500 pounds, but I think it was probably, it's probably getting close to 600 pounds between the two of you in the ring there. Tell us about that, because I believe it was the first time that you and Blake had teamed together, but it was a hell of a display that you two put on. Great match.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It is the first time me and Blake have tagged together. However, I've known Blake for probably 3 years now, 3 years of my career. And we've become quite good friends, well, quite close friends, really. So I think we've just got that spark and like that click where we just gel. Like, we both want the same thing, and I feel like our styles are very similar, so we gel really well, yeah.
Yeah. And have you had an opportunity, or did you have an opportunity before the match to kind of, you know, go through some moves together? Because you did, you know, did put together some double team moves and kind of your first match tagging together. Usually that's kind of not very straightforward, is it?
No, yeah. So for him, I knew in singles, in a singles competition, he does do the top rope blockbuster.
Yeah.
Blockbuster. Terrible with the names for moves, but so and obviously I do a power bomb, so we just thought, well, why don't we just use that as the finisher? You know, it's both singularly, they're both moves we can both pull off. So it was quite a short conversation, really, on, and we both just agreed on that it'd look cool, and hopefully it'd look cool and get the job done.
It looked more than cool. It looked devastating. And I think devastating is going to be the theme of the night. It's going to be kind of the kind of statement or the word that I'm going to be using more than anything else, to be honest with you. But for anybody watching live at home, via Facebook, via Twitch, via YouTube, if you've got any questions for Will Cruz, just send them in, add them into your device at home, and we'll do our best to answer your questions during this live broadcast. But yeah, if you've got any questions or any comments you'd like to ask Will Cruz, then get in touch. The floor is yours. But Will, before we kind of crack on, I want to take a deep dive into your wrestling career, how you got started, and kind of all the accolades that I mentioned. We do have to throw a quick plug to our sponsors. Our sponsors is, let's bring it up on screen, 1310 Apparel, that sponsor not only the Jonas Podcasting Network, but this very podcast, Wrestling with Jonas, of course. You can go to their Wrestle Merch Central store. I'll give you the link in a minute. And you've got all sorts of exclusive cool gear there, from their hardcore range to their Lucha range, to their traditional Four Corners and 1310 Apparel range. And of course, they sponsor quite a few top names on the UK scene, from Heidi Katrina to Chris Ridgway. And of course, if you're watching this or listening to this, you can take advantage of an offer that we have. And you can go to their 1310.merch.global store at their Wrestle Merch Central store. The link should be in the description to this podcast. Enter the discount code 1310WMC and get 10% off at checkout. So, just go to their Wrestle Merch Central global store. The address is on screen there, or click on the description, the link in the description, and put in that discount code 1310WMC. But, Will, it's back to us. Am I right in thinking that you started your career with Hope Wrestling in Nottingham, not too far from where you're from?
No, I started off a small company called Fight Factory Wrestling, who are based in Lincoln.
Right.
So they gave me my start in wrestling, into wrestling. And I'm very grateful for the opportunities they gave me in my time there. So.
Yeah, and I know that you wrestled quite a bit for Fight Factory back in the early days. Did they have a training school or an academy as well?
Yeah, so they have a training school at the time when I first started. It was in Lincoln City Centre, just in a business park, and then they moved to their own premises, and they do now have their own training school. Yeah.
No, that's really cool. And what was it like kind of stepping through them doors on day one? I don't know if you were kind of still in your teens when you started your training, but you must have been quite young. Tell us about kind of stepping through them doors. And were you a natural? Did you kind of pick it up quickly?
Well, I came from a rugby background. Right. So the physicality, I'd say I picked up relatively easily. I'd never say I was a natural. When I first walked through those doors, I didn't really know what to expect. I wouldn't say I was a natural, but in terms of like the physicality and throwing my body around, it didn't really bother me because I was just used to it from my rugby career.
Yeah, yeah. And you started in early 2017, I think you said off air. How did you find the training back then? You know, were there any aspects that you enjoyed or maybe didn't enjoy so much?
I'm a sucker for trying to do stuff which I probably shouldn't do given my size. I used to love going up to the top rope or like landing on a crash mat. Just you know, the cool, like when you watch it on telly, you know, oh, that looks really cool. Those kind of stuff. I'm trying to think really what else. Planning, like talking about matches and planning matches is something I used to find difficult. You know, I've got a memory of a goldfish. So for me, that coming to grips with remembering a 20-minute match was quite difficult. I'm not that, like, at the time I was doing many 20-minute matches, but you get my gist.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it's a skill and a trait that you kind of pick up over time. How long was it before you had your first match then, Will?
So a year. So I think I had a year before I had my first match, I think. I'm quite a proud person, so I didn't want to be someone who just rushed into, oh, put me in front of a crowd, you know. I wanted to make sure that I was, and obviously I make sure that I felt I was ready, and obviously the coaches at the time felt I was ready as well. So yeah, it took me about a year to get that confidence and to be able to go and have my first match. Yeah.
Did you feel ready when you had that first match? Did you know, I'm guessing you had the nerves, but did you kind of feel ready before you stepped through that curtain?
Yeah, the nerves are sky high, but I feel, yeah, I felt like I was like, this is it. Like, if I don't do it now, then I'll end up just never doing it at all. So I was like, yeah, I did feel like I was ready at that time. Yeah.
We spoke a bit off air, and just to demonstrate how quick a learner you were. I mean, like I say, it was a year before you had your first match, but within 6 months of your first match, you had a match against Nick Aldis. Now, yeah, I think at the time he'd not long dropped the TNA world title, and it was only probably a couple of months before he was due to be the NWA world title. And then 6 months in, you were putting against a former world champion. How did that feel? And when did you kind of find out? How did you find out that you're going to be facing Nick Aldis?
I think I was just at a training session one day, and the coach said to me, like, how do you feel about wrestling Nick Aldis? And at the time, I was a bit taken back. I was like, whoa, like, it's a pretty big thing, obviously, but at the same time as well, I was like, I'm so hungry to get better and to learn from people who've been doing it much longer than me, and, you know, people who have done something in the business. It was a no-brainer for me. I was like, yeah, I want to do it. Like, and then after I wrestled Nick, I learned so much from that match, and then he gave me so much knowledge and time of day as well afterwards, which he didn't need to, because obviously to him, I'd have just been another match. But no, afterwards, he took the time and gave me loads of advice, and I still talk to him.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so
that's really cool. And I was going to ask, kind of, you know, how was he to wrestle, and the whole experience of wrestling Nick Aldis. But he sounded like a pretty cool dude, and he looked after you and gave you a lot of advice after.
Yeah, he's a top professional. Yeah, I've got nothing but good things to say about him.
100%. And if you were to wrestle him kind of in 2021, would you give him a different match than what you gave him 4 years ago?
Most definitely, yeah, most definitely. Don't need to go to the ins and outs, but I feel like I'd want that match as well, just to show him how far I think I've come on since then as well. So
absolutely, yeah. I think nowadays, certainly to most British wrestling fans, you're well known as a singles wrestler, Will. But for the first couple of years, you did a lot of tags, didn't you? Did a lot of tag matches with the likes of Magic Myers in a tag team, Payne Jews, and then with B.A. Rose and Rio in the team, Crown of Thorns. I'm guessing your ambition was always to be a breakout single star, but learning the ropes in a tag team, that must have been a great learning experience for you, especially when you were trying to find your feet as a pro wrestler.
Yeah, so, yeah, like you just said, to me, my goal is to be one of the top singles competitors in wrestling, but I feel like doing those tag matches when I was just starting out and a few years in, it takes a bit of pressure off myself, because obviously there's more components in the match. So then the other people have to worry about their things. And then, it was nice to be able to. And then obviously when you're on the apron, you're still learning as well. So like, I'd still be able to watch what the other guys were doing, as well as then obviously doing my thing and then getting feedback from everyone else. So yeah, it was very profitable for me. Those early tag matches. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And say, watching you in that tag match at Wrestle Carnival with Powerhouse Blake, you looked like the two of you were having a lot of fun in there. Like you say, you'd known each other for 3 years. You hadn't kind of tagged together before that match. But, you know, what is it about being in a tag team or in a tag match that you enjoy the most?
I just think there's so much, in terms of a professional wrestling match, loads more rules to go by, and I feel like when it's all done properly and all the rules are stuck to, and it just creates that more, I'm struggling to describe it really, but that, like, more moments, I'd say, because there's not just two people to worry about, there's four people, so then it just creates more memories and more moments in the match when it's done right anyway. So tag wrestling, I do have a soft spot for it, as much as I do want to be a singles wrestler.
Yeah.
But you can learn so much from tag wrestling.
Yeah, and that's clear kind of watching you wrestle in tag matches that you thoroughly enjoy it, and you've had some fantastic tag partners and been part of some great groups in the past. But, I mean, the first couple of years of your career, you spent a lot of time wrestling around Nottinghamshire, Lincolnshire, Leicestershire, Yorkshire, wrestling for the likes of Fight Factory, Hope, Tidal, BWR, one or two others. But I believe you also did the holiday camps around 2018 as well, didn't you, Will? But around that time, the first couple of years, what are some of the highlights for you during that period and some of the kind of biggest learning experiences from working the various shows and the holiday camps during them first couple of years?
So when I could, any weekend, any free weekend I had, I think at the time as well, I was still at a championship rugby club as well. So at the time, and if I wasn't playing rugby at the weekend, I'd just do anything I could. If I wasn't on a show, I'd be travelling with wrestlers like Robbie X, two-way show. And then in terms of when I was on shows, I'd try and watch every match. I'd always be talking to like the more experienced guys and asking if they watch my match, getting feedback. Holiday camps were so, when I got onto, I did a run for All Star. I think it was 2019 though, I think. So it was only a couple of years ago. But on the run I did, I had, the team was me, myself, Dean Allmark, James Mason, Sam Adonis, Al Fantasmo and Sean Custom. So, you know, well, the first three names speak for themselves, really.
Oh, you're going to learn from that lot, aren't you?
You know, to be chucked in the mix with those guys, it was amazing. And I'm ever grateful for the opportunity to be able to have done that so early on.
Absolutely. And to prove that, you know, you were kind of knowledge hungry and thirsty for the experience, at the end of 2018, you went to New Japan Pro Wrestling's LA Dojo, didn't you? Tell us about that experience, because being trained by New Japan legend Shibata, you know, in what you called in one of your Instagram posts, the toughest but most rewarding week of your life. So tell us about that experience going over to LA for 7 days in Wimbledon.
It was like you just said, it was a week I will never forget. I mean, I went on my own for the first time I'd ever been to America. I went on my own as well, so to be like go on my own was very nerve-wracking. And then, you know, to have it was a 5 day camp, so I had 5 days with Shibata and then other wrestlers from around the world. I think there was a guy from Asia. I don't want to say which country he was from, but he was from an Asian country. And then there was just, I think, there was someone from Australia and then Canada and America as well. So to be, like, with wrestlers who share the same hunger as what I do for professional wrestling, and then obviously to learn under Shibata's tree, I mean, he is so intense. You know, there was squat after squat, push-up after push-up, and if you were getting tired, he'd come next to you and smash a kendo stick next to you and make you push for, like, just as many more as you could do or however many he told you to do. It just gave me a new outlook on, wow, like, this ain't no free ride, really. It's very much the real deal. So, yeah, I was very fortunate to be able to do that camp, and it opened my eyes a lot to what professional wrestling can be and the dedication you do need to be able to make it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I have to ask, how did you get that opportunity?
It was a camp advertised to me, so it was something I paid for. Yeah, and at the time I just wanted to learn as much as I can. So they advertised it. And then you had to send a CV in, and then if you got accepted, obviously, then you went over and did the camp, yeah.
Gotcha. And do you think that week in LA at the New Japan LA Dojo gave you the confidence to take your career to the next level?
I don't think it gave me the confidence to take my career to the next level as such, but it showed me what I needed to be doing and to take my career to the next step, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I want to talk about World War Wrestling, because it's my understanding and my belief that they helped to really put you on the map in 2019 after you won probably your first or one of your first singles titles, their heavyweight championship. Was winning the World War Wrestling heavyweight title a real confidence booster for you, and justification of all the hard work and dedication that you've been putting in there, Will?
Sure. When Brett told me that he was putting the title on me, I couldn't believe it. I was like, it is a surreal moment in terms of, oh wow, like things might be starting to pick up here, like, because he was the first person outside of Fight Factory to put a title on me, so very grateful, and I couldn't say any. I couldn't say a bad word for Brett and what he's done for me. But yeah, it was a really big thing. I know to other people, they just look at it like, oh, it's just a title at an independent promotion. But for me, that was a real like eye opener and thinking like, wow, maybe I could actually be something, you know. Obviously, yeah. Still a really long way to go. But, you know, when you get that first chance to hold a title in a company which had no links with my training or anything, it was a big thing for me.
Absolutely, yeah.
To still hold it almost 3 years down the line,
nearly 1,000 days, Will.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy, really.
Yeah, and from there you're pretty much off to the races. I think in the same year you won your first of two title championships. You were having big matches against the likes of Sugar Dunkerton, HT Drake, Joseph Connors, Cody Hall, and so many others for various promotions around the country. What was it during this time? What was it like during this time wrestling some of those top names, Will? You must have had a ton of momentum behind you, certainly after winning the World War Wrestling title and then the title championship. You was kind of on a bit of a ride then, weren't you? An upward trajectory.
Yeah, so towards the back end of 2019, start of 2020, I felt like things were finally starting to pick up for myself. I was getting into the best shape I was probably in. I was wrestling, I think, the back end, this December 2019 and then January and February 2020, I think I worked Rampage Brown 4 times.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's the best heavyweight this country's ever produced in my eyes. So to be able to not only wrestle him the once, but to be able to work him more than once, and, you know, at the time as well, I'd be travelling up to Newcastle to train under him and Screwface Ahmed as well. I felt like momentum was starting to pick up, and then obviously COVID. I was about to debut for ICW. I think in March, I think it was. I spent a week in WXW at their training school, and then I came back, and then I was at PCW the weekend I came back, and then the weekend after I was set to debut for ICW. But then, and to me, that was another huge thing for me, because I was like, to myself, I was like, that's one of the big ones to work for, and. You know, and then COVID happened, and you know, the rest is history. I was like, oh, the same for anyone else, really. But to me, I was like, oh, well, all that momentum's just gone, you know.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like I always say to like people who ask me and like what I think and where I am, I say, it's no disrespect to anyone who I've wrestled before or. Who I've worked, but I always say like before people tend to blow up, they have that one match with like a certain individual. Doesn't necessarily need to be a big name, but there'll be one match where I'll put someone on the map, and then from there on it just seems to be up and up and up, and I still don't feel like I've had that one match, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you a similar question. You know, have you had that, have you had that kind of moment or that match where you feel like I kind of get it now. I understand this wrestling business, because some wrestlers, you know, they're kind of not necessarily going through the motions, but it hasn't all clicked for them yet. Has it kind of clicked for you?
I feel I still love it. You can never stop learning in professional wrestling, but in terms of my idea on where I want to be and what I want to be doing in matches, I'd say it's clicked. Yeah, I think it was the second or third match with Rampage Brown, so it'd have been like the start of 2020, where I think I was mid match and I just thought to myself, like, yeah, this is it, you know, like, this is good, this is what I want to be doing, this is how I want to be doing it. So in that respect, yeah. But I still don't feel like I'll never stop learning though, or progressing, hopefully.
No, absolutely. And I was going to ask you about Rampage Brown and the series of matches you have with him, December 2019 through to February 2020. And like I say, one of the best in the business, one of the best heavyweights in the UK. And, you know, he must have had a lot of respect for you following them three or four matches. And like I say, another great learning experience for you.
Yeah, he's as good in the ring as he is out the ring. And like I said before, I'd worked him. I was making the drive up to Newcastle, to be able to learn from him and Screwface Ahmed as well. So I don't know. Obviously, I don't want to say he has respect for me or anything, but I learned a huge amount from him in that run of matches and whilst going to train under him.
Yeah, 100%. I want to talk about your kind of in-ring style now, Will, because, you know, I don't know if you'd class yourself as a big man, but, you know, you're about 270, 280 pounds now. How 6'3", what are you kind of coming at the moment?
In terms of what I'm weighing in? Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the 285. Yeah, 285 pounds, yeah.
But, I mean, you've demonstrated over the last 4 years that not only are you a heavyweight, but you're very, very agile. Talk to us about your wrestling style, because you have been known to do the odd moonsault, somersault sent on over the top rope, diving through the ropes, flying head scissors, cannonballs, and mixing it up with kind of awesome, devastating power moves. But have you kind of developed that style over the years? Or, I mean, you said you're quite an athletic person from the go, but tell us how you've kind of developed your style and your repertoire up to today then, I suppose.
So, I'd say I'd like to call myself a powerhouse wrestler. So, you know, like you said, big devastating moves, etc. However, in terms of like the high flying stuff, I just felt like I needed to be doing something different. So I was like, well, if I can do these, hopefully people will be like, oh, this guy can do, isn't just a big guy. He can do other stuff. But then, to my demise, really, it didn't really do anything else for me. Everyone was like, oh, wow, it's amazing. But didn't really add anything. I still feel like I was trying to figure out who Will Cruz really is, you know, like, and I yeah. still feel like I'm still trying to figure out who he is now. So I don't really know what to.
I mean, do you do many of those moves nowadays? Is that something that you've kind of do less of and focus more on the character work or what you consider yourself good at?
Yeah. So since we've come back after the pandemic, I've wanted to try as much as I can. I get very giddy sometimes, so there'll be times where I'll just be like, oh yeah, I'll do it anyway. But I'm trying my hardest to step away from doing the athletic moves. I'm just focusing on being, you know, that big guy. I feel since the pandemic, there is a big space on the UK scene for a top big powerhouse guy.
Yeah.
So at the minute, that is what I'm trying to focus on being. Rather than just a big guy who can do high-flying moves, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of your power base moves are pretty devastating. Now you might be able to describe it a little bit differently or better than I can, but like a running Oklahoma stampede into the turnbuckle with your opponent on your shoulders, and you leave the floor as well as they do. I mean, that's pretty awesome. But when did you first try that move? Because it just looks devastating all day long, that one.
So, I like to call it a backpack cannonball.
Right.
But I first tried it in a triple threat match, I believe, with Brady Phillips and Dave Graves. It was at a title show, and it involved, I think Dave was in the corner, and I feel like Brady jumped on me in a like a transmission almost, or like a guillotine from behind.
Yeah.
And I just decided, I was like, oh, well, we'll do this here. See if it works. Just essentially just a double cannonball. And then from then on, I just saw it got a good reaction, and everyone said it looked like I killed it. Killed them both. In wrestling terms, obviously, that's great, but and it's super safe, by the way.
It looks amazing. It really does.
But yeah, that's where I first came up with it, and it's just, I don't feel like anyone else. I've never seen anyone else do it, I don't think. I could be completely wrong, and it could be a really popular thing. But as of yet, I've not seen anybody else really do it. So I'd like to say it's something what I use a lot, and hopefully will still keep using a lot, because I do, like you said, it looks good, and well, it looks effective. We'll use the word there, and
100%.
which is obviously what I want to be. So,
And of course you're devastating clotheslines or lariats, and then your finisher, which is like a sit out reverse pile driver, isn't it? So what do you call your finisher?
well, I stole it from Rikishi, the Rikishi driver. But I use the crucification, is if you will.
Nice.
On it, yeah, because I used to put my arms out before sitting down and closing down like a cross,
Yeah.
and really hokey, but yeah, that's what it's that's how I
And
used to call it, yeah.
you get hit with any of those and you're not getting up, are you? You're definitely not getting up. But a quick question that's came in earlier from Brett Meadows. How would you describe your wrestling style? So we've spoken about your moves and things like that, but how would you describe your wrestling style?
To the majority, I'd say I'm a big powerhouse. I used to, when I first started wrestling, I used to love the technical aspect. However, 9 times out of 10, I'm the bigger guy in the match by quite some distance as well. So nine, like the fans aren't really going to want to watch me put someone in a wrist lock and work a wrestling hold for
No.
5 6 minutes, or that kind of wrestling. Although I do love watching it, and I would love to do it more, but yeah, so I'd say I'm a powerhouse wrestler
There you
is
go.
my style, yeah.
And tell us about some of the guys in the business, either wrestling heroes of yours that you've seen over the years, or people that you're close to that have maybe been a big influence on you over the years, then, Will.
So, my wrestling knowledge is actually quite appalling. Anyone close to me in the wrestling business who knows me will tell you, my rest, like people say wrestlers from the past, and I'm like, who? And it's out of no disrespect. It's just literally when I first started watching in 2005, I think, is when I first started watching wrestling, and that's just because my parents managed to get Sky Sports. So, and I first saw it then, and I was hooked. But then once I started training and actually learning more about how big professional wrestling is as a whole, I'd say Kenta Kobashi and Misawa were two, like, especially their days in Noah and All Japan. That was they're two guys who, if I can ever, well, I don't feel like I'll ever get there, but if I can be, say, oh, this guy reminds me of Misawa or Kobashi, I'd be amazing. Yeah, so those two are are my idols in professional wrestling. Yeah.
That's really awesome. I want to talk to you about some of your hardcore matches, because what a lot of my wrestlers, listeners or viewers might not know is that you've been involved in a few hardcore matches, haven't you, for Rise and for BWR, in a mixture of tag matches and one or two singles matches. But talk to us about kind of being a hardcore wrestler, being involved in some of them weapons matches, because like I say, they can get pretty... tasty with the weapons and the light tubes and the chairs, but give us a bit of an overview of your experience of some of these hardcore matches so far and some of the people that you've faced as well, Will.
Yeah, so my first I first dipped my toe into that kind of pool was at Rise, like you said, and I was filling in for someone. I feel like someone couldn't have made it, and Tyler Devlin, it was when BWR were doing the Rise versus BWR, like into show.
Yeah.
He had a tag match against Michael. Was it a tag match? Yeah, it was a tag match. A tag match against Michael Caden and Big Joe.
Yeah.
And I feel like whoever Tyler was going to tag with couldn't make it, or I don't know if he ever had anybody else in his mind other than myself. But he asked me if I wanted to do it, and I just, at the time, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Not really knowing what I was getting myself into. And then the first spot was glass tubes. So that was that, really. So it's certainly not something I want to do a lot of. Massive respect to the guys who do that kind of entertainment and that style, because it's no joke. I mean, I've got scars on my body from that match, and I've only done it once or twice before, so it's not for me, but I certainly respect the guys who do it. Yeah.
So you said you dipped your toe in the pool of hardcore wrestling, and that's kind of where you're going to leave it, is it?
Yeah, so in that match as well, I think at the time Mark Caden was the Rise hardcore champion. And I me and Tyler won that match, but I pinned Michael, and that belt is a 24/7 belt as well. Right. So then I ended up winning the Rise Hardcore belt. So it meant I had to do another one to drop the belt. But yeah, it's not something I actively seek out for to do. I feel I would do another one if the story is right, and if, say, it's a big storyline, but it's not something I actively want to do.
That's fair enough. It's not for everybody, is it? The glass tubes and stuff like that. But I just want to kind of take you back to last year. You mentioned about lockdown and 2020 was going to be your year. But I think it was PCW's last show in 2020, back in March. You won the Road to Glory tournament, didn't you? Defeating Sheik El Sham in the final. Now, was that designed to be like a number one contender tournament? Was you then going to be facing the champion at their next show in 2020? Was that the plan?
Yeah, so I think I was... I don't think it was their anniversary show, because their anniversary is in September.
Yeah.
But I feel like PCW had another big show coming up after that tournament. And yeah, I was the number one contender to take the title, yeah. Have a match for the title, sorry.
Yeah, and you did eventually get your title match, but you had to wait 16 months, July this year, and it was against Joey Hayes, wasn't it? And you did become the PCW World Champion. But I mean, what must that have felt like? Because it's a very prestigious company, a very prestigious championship, and like I say, so many legends of the UK game and kind of the worldwide wrestling game have won that title. And you were their champion, weren't you, from July onwards? But I'll tell you, not their champion now. I think you lost the title in their 10-year anniversary show against Sheik El Sham. But you know, just to be their champion for that 2 or 3 months must have been a thrill for you, considering the prestige of the title itself.
Yeah, like you just said, I think if anything, what I can take from that short reign is, like you said, the people who have helped, it's not only a handful of talent have held that title. And I mean, like you said, the prestige is the second to none. So to be thrown in with those names as well is, to me, it's, I wish I could have had it longer to help show why I was thrown the ball. But yeah. Like you said, that's in the record books now, so it is what it is. But yeah, ever so grateful, and it was a bit taken back, really, because like I said, you know, I think Uha Nation, Lionheart, T-Bone, just to name a few, Chris Masters, I believe, and then people who have wrestled for that title belt as well is endless. So yeah, to be able to be one of the handful who have held it is, yeah, it's a very, it's on the, it's near the top of my list for in terms of wrestling. Yeah,
but if I've got my facts correct here, I think the night that you lost the championship, it was a bit of a bittersweet night, wasn't it? Because you lost the singles championship and then you won the tag gold with Yeston Rees. So you're still a PCW champion presently.
That's it. Yeah. So for about an hour and a half, I was a multi-champ in PCW. Yeah, because we won. Me and Yeston won the PCW tag belts in the opening match of the night, and then shortly after I lost the heavyweight title later on in the night. But I'm looking, like I said, I wish I could have had the ball a bit longer to run with to help try and create something big again there. But I'm still looking forward to being able to tag with Yeston and step under his learning tree. I mean, he's an incredible athlete as well. So not in just in terms of pro wrestling, learn from him, but physique-wise, to be able to learn from him and get to know him more and, yeah, wrestle with him. I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. We're going to end the podcast with a couple more questions. So from friend of the show, Matt Bayliss, is there pressure on big guys to prove that they can wrestle? Or is it okay just to turn up and squash your opponents? Or does it matter as long as the story is right? So I know we've touched on this briefly during this episode, but is there pressure on big guys to wrestle? Or is it okay just for them to turn up and squash people?
I don't think there's pressure on big guys to wrestle as such. However, I do feel like there is pressure now for big guys to show that they are able to work and wrestle longer than 5 minutes. Personally, I hate squash matches. I don't feel like anyone really benefits anything from them. Unless you're a monster like 6'8" plus. And you're really getting over that size point. To me, I'd much rather have a 15 minute match where you get to show, obviously, technical wrestling aspects of wrestling, you know, more structure in the match than just a 2-3 minute match of me battering a poor individual. So, yeah. Yeah, I think there is pressure on big guys to be able to wrestle, but not in the sense of technicality. Sorry, I don't.
Yeah,
I feel like if there are two big guys in a ring, you're not going to want to see. Like, I don't feel fans are going to want to watch them go hold for hold. I feel like they're just going to want to watch two big lumps smash each other. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's how.
That's great. That's great. And final question from friend of the show, Ashley Clements. I've enjoyed your matches at Wrestle Carnival so far. Is there anyone you want to face next, and any promotions you want to work for that you haven't wrestled for yet? So doesn't necessarily need to be for Wrestle Carnival, but any kind of guys you'd love to wrestle, and any promotions you'd like to wrestle for?
For me, the people who I wrestle aren't I say they're not important to me, but they are important, if that makes sense. So obviously there are people I want to wrestle, however the majority of them are are contracted to television companies.
Yeah.
In terms of like in Wrestle Carnival, for instance, I'd love to get in there and wrestle Chris Ridgeway. He's someone who I'd love to throw down with. I was supposed to wrestle against Chris in October, but the show got cancelled. So that was a bit of a bummer for me. But
because that would have been your hometown, wouldn't it? Worksop.
I was wrestling Chris, but it wasn't for Wrestle Carnival. Sorry.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. No, that's fine. Yeah, fully understood. Yeah.
In terms of people who I do want to wrestle, though, I know I said I wouldn't name them, but Brody King is. I know where Wrestle Carnival and Gary are in talks a lot with Ring of Honor. So Brody King would be someone who I'd
be amazing
to step in the ring with. I'm trying to think really on the UK scene. Dan Maloney, I feel like I'd have a good match with. Just he's been a leading heavyweight on the scene for the past few years. So to be able to get in there and mix it up with him, it would be great.
There we go. Thank you very much. But as we're kind of getting close to the end of this podcast, I want to kind of thank you for being an awesome guest on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. But before we let you go, an opportunity for you to throw out your socials. So where can my listeners or viewers kind of reach out to you and say hi and learn more about Will Cruz on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or wherever we can find you?
So pretty simple, really. My Twitter and Instagram are both just Will Cruz. And Facebook is also Will Cruz as well. So, and they're the three socials I use. I'm not that active on Facebook, but Twitter and Instagram I do use quite regularly.
That's awesome. And I highly recommend checking out Will's Instagram. There's lots of clips from his matches, lots of awesome photos. If you've got some merch as well, Will, I think you do have some t-shirts.
Yeah, I do have a big cartel store. It's willcruz.bigcartel.com. Yeah,
that's awesome
t-shirts on there. Yeah,
excellent. Will, it's been fantastic speaking to you. I can't wait to see you wrestle again at Wrestle Carnival or other places around the UK, but thank you very much.
That's great. Thanks for having me, John. Thank you.
You're very welcome.